The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes, as always on Saturday mornings, a frank, honest, open conversation about gambling addiction. As always, joining me from Epic Risk Management, our friend Dan Trillaro. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Craig. How are you this morning?
Doing very well, thanks. And really happy to have a legend in the gambling addiction recovery world, Bruce W., who's got more than 50 years of recovery on his resume, joins us this morning. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I like that legend thing. Thank you.
Well, listen, 50 years is 50 years. It's one of those things I've said a lot of times on this show. One of the reasons that I kept going back to GA meetings, there was a guy in this one particular room that I found in Basking Ridge, New Jersey, who had been going for about 30 years. And I said to him after a meeting one day, listen, clearly you got this licked. Why do you still come every week for 30 plus years? And his answer was immediate. He said, I come, and that's why I've been able to do it. He goes, if I didn't come next week, I'm not sure if I'd be able to not gamble. He goes, so coming to the meeting every week is what kind of keeps me sane and keeps me out of trouble. And I would guess that it's the same for you, that the meetings have been the standard for you and why you've been able to go so long without gambling. Am I right?
Yeah, that's true. I go because I always feel better when I leave a meeting. I go because it's become part of my life. I attend two meetings a week. I've been attending two meetings a week since I came in. And it's just, you know, it turned my life around. But you know what? I like giving back. Giving is receiving, Craig. And the more I give back, the more I get. And it's so wonderful to see people who are new in the program become abstinent, turn their lives around, and become successes. And if I can be part of that journey, it's really a great thing. I have no desire to gamble.
And listen, and that's the key, that you can turn your life around. You can enjoy the good things in life once you figure out that, you know, you're powerless against the addiction and you need help to conquer it. So let's go all the way back. When did your gambling start? Because it obviously started before, you know, the technology of today. I imagine it was a piece of paper and a pencil. But walk us through the start for you.
Well, I had that standard textbook start, you know, flipping cards in school, pitching pennies and all that, playing card games in the neighborhood. My father was a compulsive gambler. My uncle gambled, so I grew up in a gambling environment in the Borough Park, Bensonhurst area. And, one of the things that I've seen over the years is that we win the first time. So I used to handicap for my father. And I used to, at that time, there was a Daily Mirror and the Daily, you know, the Mirror in New York. And they had a thing in the sports page where the guy, a column would give a tip. But if you bought the sheet, you got a real, real extra insight to the winners of that day, which he would do in code. So my father says, let's go to the track. And this was the first time we went to Aqueduct. And based upon that code and whatever, we picked out the double. It paid $176. And the horse in the second race was disqualified. And our horse was put in as the winner. We were so happy. I said, holy, this is easy. This is really, really something. And that's what got me started. I started playing, picking out the horses for my father and listening to the results and betting. And then I started getting involved with sports. And then I became addicted.
Yeah, for you, what was the gamble that you fell to? Was it more horse racing? Was it more the daily sports stuff?
Horses and sports.
And give us an idea of how bad was it? Like, when you look back on your life now and you look at yourself as a younger man, how bad was the actual addiction?
All right, so let me tell you what happened. So I was stealing at a brokerage house, Payne Weber Jackson and Curtis. They're out of business, I guess I could say their name. And I got caught. I was stealing for 3 years. And on Friday, then they caught me. And they interrogated me for about a week. And then on a Friday afternoon, January 29th, 1971, a detective came into the place and arrested me. You have the right to remain silent. I said, oh, my, I can't. hearing this. And he said to me, we're going to take you over to the first precinct. And I asked him, can we do this on Monday? Let me go home for the weekend. He said, I'm retiring in a couple of weeks. I just can't take the chance. He took me over to the first precinct. They fingerprinted me. They took a photo of me with my number across my chest. And the detective said, does anybody know about what's going on? I says, no. He says, you want to tell anybody? So I said, let me call my father up. And he happened to be working at the same place in a different department. I called him up. He says, Bruce, is what I'm hearing about you true? And I said, yes. And they took me over to the tombs, and I'm there. I'm nervous. I'm so nervous. I'm in a cell with about 50 people. I had to go to the bathroom, but I was all the way in the front, and I refused to go in the back. I'm waiting. Finally, at about a quarter to 12 that night, they let me go on my own recognizance. And I was very fortunate because had they kept me there, at past 12, I would have had to stay for the weekend. I come home, and my wife says, where were you? I says, I was arrested. She goes, come on, where were you? I says, I was arrested. Finally, after the third or fourth time, she believed me. And that Monday, it was a bad weekend, Craig. It was really not a good weekend. On Monday, my wife comes home from work, and I'm laying on the floor reading the Telegraph, which is the racing form now, with a book called Tom Einsley's Complete Guide to Thoroughbred Racing. And she said to me, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm not going to go bet with the bookie anymore, but I'm going to just go to the track with the money I have. She goes, you are crazy. And the following Thursday, February 4th, 1971, she dragged me down to the St. George Hotel meeting in Brooklyn. And we took the elevator up to the second floor. There was a guy named Jimmy R. And we got off the elevator. He said, we're looking for GA. And he said, are you in any trouble? I said, yeah, I just got arrested last week. He says, great, come on in. Huh. I says, great, come on in. What are you talking about? At that first meeting, they read me 20 questions, which is asked by every person who is new to the program. And to answer your question, how was my gambling in those days? If it's okay, and I think it should be, I'd like to read to you the 20 questions for people who are listening and get a good idea of whether they may think they're a compulsive gambler or not. And it went like this.
Well, before you do that, let me just walk people through what Bruce is going to do here. For those of us who are compulsive gamblers, when you go to your first GA meeting, there's a list of questions Bruce is about to read to us. And based on how many of those questions you answer yes to, it's kind of a guide to whether or not you fit the, you know, the kind of the manuscript of having a problem. And every one of us has answered yes, if not to every one of these questions, to the majority of them. So that's what Bruce is going to do. So, yeah, we've never done that on this show, Bruce, so go right ahead.
Yeah, it says at the bottom of the 20 questions, most compulsive gamblers will answer yes to at least 7 of these questions. So here we go. So did you ever lose time from work or school due to gambling? Well, I answered that question no, because school was not involved. Did you ever lose time from work? And I answered no. But now I would answer yes, because we would leave. I was going to CW Post College with a few friends of mine, and we'd leave early from school to go to Aqueduct. I would spend most of my time in the library with the Morning Telegraph. And, you know, it was not a good
time. Let me ask you a quick question. Were you stealing money to cover losses, or were you stealing money so that you could wager more?
Both.
Both, okay.
You know what we used to do? I'm embarrassed to say. We used to take books from people's cars and go into the bookstore and resell them. We used to, when the new semester started, we used to go into the bookstore and throw books outside the door and come back and resell them. We used to steal books and to go to Aqueduct.
Got it.
Has gambling ever made your home life unhappy? It was yes, obviously. My home life was miserable. Arguments, fights, just really uncomfortable situation. Number 3, did gambling affect your reputation? Yes, it affected it. Everybody knew I was a compulsive gambler, liar, full of you-know-what person. 4, has you ever felt remorse after gambling? Of course, only when I lost, and I always lost. Compulsive gamblers never win. We always lose. I believe we gamble to lose, so I was always feeling remorse. 5, did you ever gamble to get money with which to pay debts or otherwise solve financial difficulties? This is the great insanity. The answer is yes to compulsive gambling. I never had money, and the reason I never had money and had financial difficulties because I gambled. And the insanity was, well, I'll just keep gambling. One of these days I'm going to win and I'm going to solve everything. Six, right. Did gambling cause a decrease in your ambition or efficiency? Yes, of course. Seven, after losing, did you feel you must return as possible and win back your losses? Once again, we always lose. It never dawned on me that the way to get out of this insanity was to stop. I thought in the addiction that going back, one day I'm going to hit that big score and that'll take care of everything. Eight, after a win, did you have a strong urge to return and win more? Of course. Nine, did you often gamble until all your money was gone? I mean, to me, that's the silliest question. I never had any money. I always lost, and I was always broke. Did you ever borrow money? Did you ever borrow to finance your gambling? If I know you, Craig, I owe you. I had family finance, household finance, beneficial finance, banks, friends, relatives. I borrowed from everybody. 11, have you ever sold anything to finance gambling? No. That's the only question I answered no, and you want to know why? Because I never had anything of value to sell. 12, were you reluctant to use gambling money for normal expenditures? I talk a lot about it. The answer is yes. I talk a lot about when I was working at the brokerage house, we lived about, on the way home, we lived about four blocks from the train station, four long blocks in Brooklyn. And when it was raining, I would put, on the way home from work, I would take the cardboard from the back of a legal pad and stuff it into my shoes. Why? Because my shoes always had holes in them. Hmm. Always. I never thought of buying a pair of shoes. I never thought of buying a suit. I never went anywhere. I never did anything because everything that I took. You know, I stole enough money to buy two houses in those days, but it never dawned on me that. Did gambling make you careless of the welfare of yourself and of your family? Of course, yes. 14, did you ever gamble longer than you had planned? What a ridiculous question. 15, have you ever gambled to escape worry, trouble, boredom, loneliness, grief, or loss? Yes, of course. 16, have you ever committed or considered committing an illegal act of finance gambling? Yes. You know, the first time I ever stole money was from my mother's purse. Hmm. I was about 10 or 11 years old. We lived in 59th Street in Brooklyn. There was a church, St. Rosalie, that had a bazaar every summer. And they had this big wheel. And I went over there one night, and I lost about three quarters and came back to the house, took a $10 bill from my mother's pocketbook, and went back and stole. And that was my thing. I always stole for gambling. And I stole a Payne Webber for 3 years, 3.5 years. And here's the insanity of it. I knew that I was going to get caught. I knew that I was going to get caught.
How'd you get caught? An internal audit or someone?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of the guys in I was in charge of the bond department in the cage, meaning the back office. And one of the employees who worked for me in my department was checking out, you know, the accounts where I was taking the money from. And he caught me. I remember my boss came over to me and said, Bruce, they want to see you upstairs. And, you know, the partners. And, we were by the elevator. I says, well, what's going on? He says, well, they don't want to give you a raise. And we went upstairs, and I walked into this room. There was about 20 partners, and they sat me down, and they asked me what was going on. And this is the first time I ever said that I was a compulsive gambler, because I heard about compulsive gambling. I used to listen to WMCA to get the results. At night, there was no way to get results in those days except the radio. And I was listening to the radio, and they had a show on one time on WMCA late at night, and they were talking about, they had a compulsive gambling meeting, a Gamblers Anonymous meeting, excuse me. And I related to it, and I was crying. And my wife said, what are you crying about? And I said, I'm gambling, I can't. And she said, you'll be okay, you'll be okay. And so I knew about Gamblers Anonymous.
Sure. How much did you do any time for the theft or no?
Well, I was sentenced in May 23rd, 1972. After many court appearances, I finally, it was due day. This was it. And I was in court, and I was standing in front. The judge says, please stand, after I pled guilty to what I had done. And the two court officers came over to me, and they stood next to me. And I said, oh, my God, this is real. And he says, I'm sentencing you to a year in prison. And they took me away. They put me in a cell. And I did 6.5 months in Rikers Island.
I'm going to stop you right there. We'll continue on with Bruce's story right after this on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Dan Trelaro, quiet on this one, but like me, we're both engaged hearing Bruce's story. Bruce W.'s got 50-plus years of recovery. So, Bruce, if you want to finish the last three questions there, and then I have a couple questions for you. Go ahead.
Sure. Did gambling cause you to have difficulty in sleeping? Yes. Do arguments, disappointments, or frustrations create within you an urge to gamble? Yes, of course. Escape. 19, did you ever have an urge to celebrate any good fortune by a few hours of gambling? Yes. And lastly, have you ever considered self-destruction or suicide as a result of your gambling? The answer is yes. I wished I was dead. I never had the... I don't think it takes guts to clear yourself. I think it's the coward's way out. But I wish I was dead many a time on a Sunday night when I knew that I had lost again with the bookies. I owed $1,400, $1,600, $2,000, and I had no money. I'm making $70, $80 a week. I would look up to the ceiling and say, God, please take me. I just can't take it anymore. Please.
So other than your wife taking you to that first meeting, how did you actually conquer it beyond just going to the first meeting? And did you ever gamble again from that first meeting without anyone knowing?
Yes, I gambled for about a month and a few days from February 4 to March 8th. I finally stopped. Because I ran out of money, but I still had this desire to one day I'm going to show them. I had the books up in the closet. My buddy would say to me, why don't you throw those books out? But here's what happened. I had a spiritual awakening. I was working for a car service, and everyone in the car service gambled. It was one of the things they all did. And I'm waiting for my turn to take out a customer. And a guy came in from his run, and he asked the dispatcher, who got the triple at Aqueduct? And the guy said, ABD. And I says, and the guy went, ABD, I had ABF, and he pounded the table. I'm 30 years old at the time. This guy was 60. He was like, you know, old when you're 30, 60 years old. And I said to myself, a spiritual awakening. God came into my system, I swear. And at that particular moment, I said, do I want another 30 years of this? Do I want to go to jail again? And at that particular moment, I surrendered to step one of the program that I am powerless over gambling, and it made my life unmanageable. And from there, I started working the steps of recovery, which every person who really needs to stop should follow. And the 12 steps, of course, we got from AA. But that was the moment, though, for you.
That was...
Yep. That was it.
It wasn't going to prison. It wasn't your wife. It wasn't the first GA meeting. It was that moment when you saw another guy twice your age saying, and you said to yourself, do I want to be that guy 30 years from now? Wow.
Absolutely. And wow. I'm telling you. And from that moment on, I said, I am done. I had said 1,000 times, I will never, if I don't get caught stealing this last check, I swear I will never, ever, never, ever gamble again. And of course, that was all.
I made that promise many times. Say if I win today, I'm done. I'm good.
I'm out.
No debt. I'm all good. Yeah. I think we've all done that.
But this time, it was. And ever since then, I've been on this path of recovery that has turned my life.
Let me ask you this: you know, there's a generational gap, of course, between your experience and what young men are going through now with the ease of, you know, the mobile phone gambling and, you know, fantasy sports and now, you know, crypto and all the opportunity that's out there. It's almost unavoidable. Like, I bet you, you know, 5 years from now, there'll be more kids who are 21 years old that have gambled than haven't gambled, which I don't know if that we've ever experienced that in our country's history. But for young guys who are at step one, who know that they got something going on, maybe they haven't told a friend, but in their heart they know they have a problem, and they're worried about taking that first step. What would your advice to those guys be?
Take it. Take that step because, you know, it was just interesting. I was just talking to a friend of mine's grandson, 21 years old. He lost 10 grand, and he was looking for advice. Listen. You know, it's when you're 20, when you're young, when 21, we think we're all powerful. That nothing can stop us, regardless of what's going on. We'll overcome it. We'll do it. But I'm telling you and the 21-year-olds that are out there, stop. Go to Gamblers Anonymous. one day at a time, stop. Don't look at it as a lifetime program. Look at it as a one day at a time program. I'm telling the 21s, the 22s out there, if you do not stop, you will join, you will get on the carousel of insanity that I was on. And yeah. I would always look to get off, and I'm saying, okay, it's stopping. The carousel is stopping. Bruce, get off, please. I'm begging you. And I stayed on. It sped up again, and there I was.
Dan, let me ask you a question. Just in your experience, talking to the amount of professional therapists and folks of that ilk that you've connected with over the years, have they ever explained why we feel that way, why it's so hard for us to do what's the obvious smart thing to do?
Yeah, it's that fear of the unknown. It's a great question because, you know, we almost become comfortable in the pain of the gambling addiction. It's predictable. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable, but it's something that we know. We know we've been there. We can understand it. We can predict it. Some professionals have drawn a similar comparison to those who stay in relationships that might become abusive over time. You know, it's easy to, on the outside, to say, well, just get out of it. Why are you staying with this particular individual? But for the person who's involved, it's not that simple. And that's some of the parallels we see with how a process addiction like gambling can just, in a way, beat us up mentally, physically, emotionally, behaviorally, yet we stay in it because it's comfortable and predictable. And one of the things we hear from the young people, especially the 21 to 25-year-olds, they just can't envision a life without gambling. And it's, in essence, they almost have to do what Bruce did over the last 50-plus years. They have to create a new life where gambling no longer fits into it. Instead of worrying about just trying to keep gambling out of their life, they've got to create that new life where it just doesn't fit in.
Every fantasy, what is the dream world of a compulsive gambler? It's in our little yellow book here. And everything that I dreamt about when I was in the addiction, I got from abstinence. There's not one thing in the world that I need right now. I have everything that I ever wanted. I have my family, two daughters that are GA babies, three grandchildren. I'm in Florida right now. I'm a snowbird. I fly up to New York. I have everything financially. I am abundant. I'm at peace. I'm a happy man. I'm telling you, it didn't come from gambling. It came from abstinence. And to your point about the people who are in the field of recovery for sociologists, psychiatrists, and whatnot, the smart ones who are dealing with an addict recommend them to Gamblers Anonymous, recommend them to Alcoholics Anonymous, et cetera. As good as they may be, nothing can do what the Gamblers Anonymous and other 12-step programs can do for the addict.
Yeah,
addict is... That's all we know is addiction, and that's all we do.
And I want to further that point because I didn't accept that years ago, and I'm, you know, 3.5 years into my sobriety. I didn't accept it. I fought that notion, and I can tell you now, 3.5 years into my sobriety and my recovery, I accept that now because if I didn't meet other people like myself, I would have gotten over on every therapist I ever met in my life and told them what they wanted to hear and gone and gambled. It was only because I met people like Bruce, like Dan, like the, you know, the 12 or 13 other folks I met in rehab, where I was able to see other people and see myself in them. And the only way to do that is to surround yourself by people who have shared experiences. So I buy that now, but to be honest, I didn't buy that 3 years ago. I really didn't.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to do. We addicts believe in the fantasy world that one day, somehow, we will become what we wanted to be, successful, compulsive, successful gamblers. But the reality is, as I said before, we always lose. Compulsive gamblers never, ever, ever win. They may have a winning moment, a winning week, even a winning month, but at the end of the day, we lose.
Well, everyone knows that story all too well. Bruce, I really appreciate you taking the time from Florida today to join us. And I think your message is one that needs to be heard because, like we always say in the show, there's a lot more people who are about to go down that road who have no idea what's coming. And to hear from someone who's done it so successfully for so long, I think is very powerful. So thank you very much for joining us this morning. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I really appreciate the opportunity to carry the message of abstinence.
Thanks. Have a great day, Bruce. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce.
So, Dan, there wasn't a lot of talking, I'd say, for me and you, but yeah, when you have a guy that's done it for 50 years, I think his voice is far more important, and You know, it really doesn't matter whether it's horse racing in 1972 or if it's, you know, fantasy wagering on your phone in 2021. It's the same thing, right?
Yeah, you know, it's just it's all dressed up differently, but it still hits the brain same ways, right? And, you know, the one thing Bruce said, I don't know if you picked up on it, but when he first got to that meeting, we had a gentleman, a few weeks ago, and it was his wife who brought him to that meeting. And once again, another instance of someone here, Bruce, who's got over 50 years of recovery, it was his wife. Before gambling was even like a really mainstream addiction that people were talking about, it's the spouse that saw it first and said, we're going. And there's, you know, it's just funny when I think about today and conversations you and I have had both online and offline about messaging to the family members and the loved ones, because they'll always see it first before the person with the problem.
Yeah, like Dan, what Dan's alluding to, Dan and I got a call from a gentleman who has a college-age son who is a compulsive gambler. And the dad, you know, frankly, as many of us, you know, been in the same spot. I know my family was. You don't know who to talk to, who to turn to, how to get them help. And, you know, obviously we've spoken to the family and we'll try our best to make sure that the young man gets the help that he obviously needs. And that's part of the problem, that the, you know, the compulsion's there, the addiction's there. And a lot of people, because it's so new, not a knock at all on all the services that are out there, but because it's so new, people don't know where to turn.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's so many resources. It's crazy that state by state, more resources are becoming available, but it's getting the word out, right? We can create tons of content. We can create tons of pages and web pages and infographics and literature, but it's the distribution of the content that's always the challenge, and making sure that people are aware that there are resources, not just for the person who struggles with the problem, but for the family members, because they are vital key components in that road to recovery, as you and I both know.
Well, I, as always, appreciate your time. Dan Trelawis with Epic Risk Management, formerly with the New Jersey Council on Compulsive Gambling, and you know, they do a great job as well. You know them better as 800-GAMBLER. We'll do it again next week, getting ready for the holidays, and we'll have some special programming for Christmas and New Year's here on The Fan. Dan, as always, thanks so much.
Have a great week.
All right, coming up next, Sean Marash. Evan and I are back together Monday at 2 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and thank you for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.